Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today is our guest for this week, Dan Beverley. How are you today, Dan?
I'm very well, thank you, Miro.
It's great to have you again in the final episode of our series on career. Today we'll be talking about career success habits. And for those who are listening, or if you haven't yet tuned in into the previous episode in this series with Dan, he is a leadership and performance coach working exclusively with women to help them advance their careers with a real focus for what he calls the pivotal career moments. He is also the author of The Power of Pivotal Moments. And today, as mentioned, we'll be talking about career success habits. So my first question for you, Dan, is adopting a new habit is often very difficult for us in both our professional and personal lives. Why is that, and how do we fix it?
Sure. So I think I'd like to start with three little insights into the brain from recent neuroscience. So the first is that the brain hardwires everything it can. Habits are hugely attractive to the brain. They're very energy efficient ways. And whenever our brain notices something that's either it tags as important or often recurring, then we want to turn that into a habit for that energy efficient reason. The second insight is that it's very difficult to deconstruct that hardwiring. Just by thinking about those habits we want to change, we're actually just strengthening that hardwiring circuitry. So very difficult to deconstruct our hardwiring. But the good news is insight number three, which is that it's very easy to create new hardwiring. And so there's two things that I want to share with people and have them take away from that. The first is that it's not so that much that it's very difficult to change a habit, it's just very easy to carry on doing the things that we've always done. And the second thing is that it gives us our core habit change strategy, which is not to undo the habit we don't want, but to create a superseding habit. If I'm a smoker, I don't want to focus on how I stop smoking. I want to focus on creating a non-smoking habit, which is a really different perspective. So how do we do that was the second part of the question. The first thing is to give the behavior a name, to bring it into awareness so that we can really notice that we're performing this habit at any given time. And then secondly, to get really clear on the impact it's having, particularly the negative impact, and how great it would be to have a different outcome from the behaviours. And then finally, to make a commitment, not an inkling, not a kind of, that'd be quite nice, I'd quite like to quit smoking, I'd quite like to drink less, I'd quite like not to have so many donuts at lunchtime. You actually make a full-throated commitment, a decision that says, I'm going to change this habit, and to do it with a certain air of inevitability. From that foundation, the next thing to do is to deconstruct the habit. And many of us just think about the routine, the actual behavior. So I eat donuts at lunchtime, let's say. That's the habit. But actually, that's just one part of the habit. That's the routine. And prior to the routine, we have the trigger. And a trigger can be a person, it can be a context, it can be a time of day, something that kicks off the routine. The second part is the routine, and the third part is the reward, what we actually get from whatever the behavior might be. So those are the three big parts of any habit. And then the fourth part is craving. That's the thing that drives it. That's expecting the reward before it's happened. So it's very useful to deconstruct our habit using those three or four key elements. So okay, the behavior is that I'm eating donuts at lunchtime, but notice that the trigger is at lunchtime, and notice that the reward is not the sugar rush, but it's actually I want to get up from my desk, I need the break, and I want to chat and hear what's really going on at the water cooler when I go and get my donut. And then maybe there's other ways to satisfy that reward. And we can also use the trigger to tell us, okay, this is the time to use something we called an implementation intention. When we want to change a habit, we need to give it lots of focus, the new habit, lots of focus, lots of attention, lots of repetition, lots of encouragement. So when I'm coaching with clients, and when my clients are working on habit change themselves, that's what they need to do. They need to really focus on their new habit. But to get there, whilst we're making it a habit, we have this idea of an implementation intention. Very simply, a formula that says, if and when X, I will do Y. And we create that as a formula, almost non-negotiable, so that when we notice that trigger moment happens, we do something else in its place.
Right. And now let's go back to careers and how habits impact our career. What are the success habits that we need in order to achieve our goals?
For me, a career success habit is and are those key disciplines that we perform over time that that over time add up to career success. A bit of a, you know, Aristotle, what, you know, we are what we repeatedly do. So excellence is not an act, but it's a habit. So something that, I said, these disciplines that we just weave into our day and that over time add up to career success. I do have some ideas about what those could and might be, but I certainly invite my clients to define their own career success habits first. They're the experts in themselves. They're the experts in their career. And if I say to them, okay, what things really add up to career success for you? They come up with some great ideas. And I love to do that first because, you know, that's the issue with suggestions. Suggestions turn off the other person's thinking. If you thought about X, well, now all I can do is think about X. So it's my coaching instinct always to come to my clients first. And they come up with some really great ideas. I'll share one that comes to mind just because it's something that's happened in the last few weeks. One of my clients, like a lot of my clients, very busy, high-performing individuals, are certainly able to handle the pressure and the stress. But what she was saying to me is that constantly playing catch-up, constantly running into meetings 5 minutes late and having to very quickly get herself on message and work out what's going on. And, you know, this is a high-performing, high-functioning person, so she's able to do that. But she's not enjoying that position. And she's created for herself a career success habit that says she'll be early to every meeting, 5 minutes early for every meeting. And what's great about that is that habit then leads to so many other things. It requires her to be really disciplined with her time. It requires her to leave the previous appointment 5 minutes early, certainly on time, but 5 minutes early to get to the next meeting 5 minutes early, to be very well prepared. And it also gives her an opportunity to get calm and get focused and really tune in to the outcome of the agenda that she wants for that meeting. So she's just showing up as the best version of herself. So that for me is a great example of a career success habit. Some others that I'll share just from my personal experience. For me, I'm very big on morning routine. I think it's really important to kick the day off right. And my morning routine actually starts the night before by laying out. I'm a gym person in the morning, so I don't want to lay my gear out in the morning and make it a completely frictionless thing in the morning. I don't want to do too much thinking. I just want to go straight into my morning routine. I also used to think it was very important to really work my network when I landed in a new role and working in my career, and not just knowing my core network but the extended network and people around the building that would really know how things would work. So not just the bosses, but I need to know the security guys so they can let me stay late, and I need to know the support guys because I need to call in a favor to get a project delivered. Knowing the PAs and the assistants, because then they would get me time in people's diaries that I really needed to talk to. So working the extended network was always a career success habit for me. Another is to declutter. I mean, just to the act of clearing one's desk and just feeling totally on top of your role and being very organized. I'm not going to tell people how to do that. Everybody's got their own systems for managing their email and their calendars and their to-do lists. We don't need another time management system. But to declutter our professional lives is, I think, a great habit to have. And what I used to focus on is status reporting. And for some of us, that would be, every week or, a once a month thing. But actually, I want that status report at my fingertips every single day. And I used to make that a career success habit, to have at my fingertips headlines of the projects that we were working on, what were the key issues, what were the key risks, going right at those, so that when people ask, and at any given point, I can be really sure that I'm focused on the things that will make a difference. The final career success habit I'd love to share with people is to have a balance or energy goal. We often set goals around career and the things that we want to achieve, but I love to invite people to set a balance or an energy goal, something that make sure that they're turning up for work every day at the top of their game. And we can only do that when we've got a sense of balance. I never tell my clients what that should be. For some people, at different points in their lives, career is the number one thing for them. So there's no sense in my mind that you should be doing X amount of home time and versus X amount of time at work. Just as long as it's intentional, it's something that they've actually set for themselves. And around time management, I think that's a big piece as well. But for that, I keep that really simple. And I just work to now or not now. And if it's now, I do it. And if it's not now, it goes in the calendar. But if it doesn't go in the calendar, then it's not worth doing. Now, just to bring it back to career success habits, one of the things that we might notice about these habits are that they're what we call keystone habits. Habits that lead to lots and lots of other things. So lots and lots of other positive things. So morning routine is an example. It's a fairly small thing, but it kickstarts my day. and it leads to lots and lots of other good things happening. And that's what a keystone habit is. It can be quite small. It can be quite easy to achieve, but it's the springboard for lots of other things.
Now, everyday distractions, and most of all, the fear of failure, can often break our habits and hinder our progress. Is there a way we can come to terms with failure and perhaps even use it to our advantage?
Mm. In a nutshell, it's about reframing failure as feedback. We hear that a lot in the personal development literature, and yes, it's easier to say than it is to do. But if we can change our perspective on what we are otherwise calling failure and see that as feedback, it becomes a real recipe for success. If these are the things that don't work, I just need to reverse those or re-engineer those to turn it into something that will be successful for me. I also like to, this may sound a little bit twee, but to show gratitude for failures. Thank you for showing me what doesn't work. Thank you for sparing me a lot of time and effort in one direction that just wasn't going to work. And I said it's a bit twee, but I probably say that because I know I just don't do enough around gratitude. And it's one of the things that I learn from my clients is that an awful lot of my clients, they're very grateful for the things that are happening in their lives. And when they do that, they see great success. So that's I think, a really important aspect, show gratitude for those failures. I'd also like to encourage people to decide that they're a learner. They're somebody who wants to get better and educate themselves. So just coming at the world with a learning perspective, I want to take in on everything, I want to absorb all these things, is a really positive mindset. I also like people to actually enjoy and revel in the challenge. If somebody's got something that they really don't like to do, I was saying this to a client the other day, she does not like these crucial conversations that we have, which, by the way, is a really important career skill, to be able to notice that we've just dropped into a crucial conversation and then having a strategy for dealing with it. But her issue was that, you know, I don't like those. And my goal is not only to make it that she can do a good job in those difficult, challenging conversations, but actually want to do it, actually start to really like it. And, you know, when we get really good at something, we start to like it. And when we like something, we start to get passionate about it. And all these great qualities come through just by choosing to enjoy and revel in the challenge. And then the final thing is to talk to ourselves in a positive and kind way. So often our inner critic is a very harsh voice. It's not the voice we would ever use with anybody around us, professional or personal life. So, you know, talk to ourselves in a kind and positive way, in an encouraging way, and see the positive things that are happening. And I think that's a really big step in terms of coming to terms with the fear of failure.
Now, the majority of career interference is internal. Why is that? And how do we deal with it on a day-to-day basis?
Timothy Galway, who's the Inner Game guy, if you don't know, definitely recommend checking him and his books out. He has this equation, performance equals potential minus interference. And he used to talk about two versions of ourselves, self one and self two. Self one can do it all, and self two is the voice in the background that says, don't do it like that, do it like this. And are you sure? And do you remember all those failures? So why is that happening? Well, our subconscious is programmed to keep us safe. You know, our brain's number one instinct is survival. And there's some really interesting neuroscientific research that showed that the brain uses the same circuitry for physical reward and threat as it uses for social reward and threat. So to put it another way, my brain doesn't know the difference between being physically threatened and being socially threatened. It just gives us an idea of just how social the brain is. And so social threat is a really important driver to the brain. And our subconscious is in the background trying to keep us safe, trying to say, well, let's not stretch ourselves outside of our comfort zone because we might make a mistake, we might look silly doing it, we might embarrass ourselves, all sorts of things come into play. So I think that's why it happens. How do we get over it? Well, there's some basic things. First question is, let's think of a time when you were really confident, when everything was in flow, you were absolutely smashing your goals. It almost didn't feel like work. You were achieving your goals 150, 200%. Tell me about that version of yourself. What qualities did you have? How were you moving? How were you thinking? How were you acting? How were you behaving? And let's drop ourselves into that version of ourselves. And just notice which of those qualities we want to borrow in those moments when we would like to perform at a higher level. Some other basic things that really help people is preparedness, just feeling like I've really thoroughly prepared for the thing that I'm about to step into. Getting support, actually saying, you know, I don't need to know everything, but I do know people around me who do know specific elements in specific areas. Let me go and get some support from them. And also to enjoy learning and go and learn some new things. And that often helps us, I think, to reduce the interference. But number one reason, the number one thing to do is to take action. It's so common for us to say, well, I'm just going to wait until I'm a little bit more confident and then I'm going to take action. But actually, confidence follows action. Just notice that whenever you've got into action, confidence has followed as a result. And we just need a little bit of faith. So actually, it's not my confidence I need to work on. It's my sense of faith and that my confidence will come when I take action. And then the final piece, and this is crucial to any career success, is to make decisions and establish decision-making as a habit, a behavior, something that you're good at and something that you repeatedly do. Great decision-making is marked by making lots of decisions, by committing to them very quickly and by changing them very infrequently. And it is a habit. It's something we can practice and do more of. So make lots of decisions and just enjoy the feeling that comes with making a solid commitment to something.
From promotions to job hunting, the next stage can be quite intimidating a lot of the time. What techniques can we use to get ourselves ready for the next step?
My favorite is visualization. This is about vividly imagining how we'd like to perform in a future scenario. And the reason this is important is that our brain doesn't really know the difference between what I'll say, quote unquote, reality with something that we vividly imagine. So actually, visualization is about teaching our brain to do something that it hasn't done. And of course, when we do things repeatedly, we get good at them and we also get very comfortable doing them. So if I visualize the thing that I'm, that the new sphere that I'm trying to move into multiple times, then by the time I actually come to do it in the real world, it's something quite familiar to me. I also mentioned earlier about this best version of ourselves, actually noticing, you know, who we are and what we do when we're at the top of our game and pouring all of that into a new situation. One of the real joys of coaching is that it's showing people that they have access to that very best version of themselves just inside a conversation. A little bit of talking and a little bit of thinking, asking the right sorts of questions, and we can become that very best version of ourselves and have that person take us into the new situation. And then the final piece is to know the cost of staying stuck. You know, are you happy not moving out of the comfort zone? Are you happy to make these compromises and live with these frustrations and all the things that we're currently tolerating? And when we get really clear on the negative impact, we just decide enough is enough. And I don't want to live in this particular, in this space anymore. I want to break out of it. And that can be a huge motivator.
Now, you say that developing and harnessing what you call the quality of thought is the most important thing. Why is that?
Because thinking is the source. You know, I'm a very brain-based coach. My coaching education and approach is very much rooted in contemporary neuroscience. I'm very careful not to suggest that makes it any more credible than other schools of coaching, but I know that it produces really strong results. I know that my clients love to learn this stuff and to use it in their day-to-day. So I'm a very brain-based coach, and of course I'm going to say thinking's the most important thing. But for me, you know, thinking leads to behaviors, leads to results. If you think about anything that you've achieved, it's been the result of some thinking. Now, it might be thinking that you might have just decided in this moment, this is what I'm going to do, and so you get into action. It might be some thinking you did weeks and weeks ago, and only now are you deciding to take action. It might be something that comes to you as intuition, a feeling, rather than language. But there is quality of thought behind every big thing that we've ever achieved, in my opinion. Now, action is really important. It does turn it into everything else. It does bring that thinking into the new world, into the real world. But thinking is the source. And I would also say feeling, because you know, you can't have a thought without a feeling without a thought. So state is really important. So if we put quality of thought at the core of everything that we do, what happens? Well, we make good decisions. We might stay cool under pressure. We have more influence and impact when we're working with other people. We achieve real clarity on our goals. We get really focused and attentive to those. We are able to move ourselves out of a comfort zone. We're able to generate new ideas and innovate. We're able to stay motivated and inspired. And most of all, we're able to get out of our own way. And you know, all of that is thanks to a quality of thought. Now, I mentioned before that some feel like state is the most important thing, that we need to be in a very positive state, and then that creates the right kind of thinking. But for me, we can't really divorce the two. We're the sum total of how we are feeling and being at any particular time, and we need to have both the thinking and the feeling, and we can move ourselves into that positive state again with thinking. So for me, thinking is the most important thing.
Great. And with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Dan. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you as a guest in this series of podcasts.
Thank you, Miro.
And for those listening, if you missed the previous episodes in our series, of course, the playlist will be below, where you can find out our discussions on career strategy and career goals. And if you would like to know more about Dan, you can, of course, visit his website at www.danbeverly.com. You can also find him on social media at Dan Beverly, on Twitter at Dan Beverly, on LinkedIn, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dbeverlycoaching. Again, thank you very much for joining us this week and giving us all these amazing insight.
Thank you, Mira.
On the topic of career. And to our audience, we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Lid Radio, and we hope you enjoy this series.